Zoe George, this week's sportscaster on the line from somewhere in Pōneke. Kia ora, Zoe. Welcome back to Nights.
Kia ora. It's always lovely to be on the show with you, Brian.
It's nice to have you on. Now, Zoe, your toilet story keeps on giving. First, the lack of female toilets at sports venues. Now, music venues. Where next? Are you going to check out Parliament? What's it like at Parliament? Do you know?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think I do need to. I wrote a story last week about the Opera House in Wellington and the lack of access to toilets for women. And it was quite a punny, dunny story, because how can you write about toilets without throwing in a few toilet puns? But it got a conversation going about access to public facilities and how we all deserve to participate and engage in public life, not just in sport, but in art as well. You know, they're two of my favourite things, sport and musical theatre. I was on the project last Thursday as well, which was mildly entertaining. But toilets is just such a really important subject, and you know, it's something that makes us feel a little bit uncomfortable to talk about, but we've all got a toilet story and it's a universal experience. So why not, unclog this issue together?
Yeah, okay, right. I think we might have just used up all the available pun space in the program tonight. I want to ask you about the Olympics, Zoe. Every sportscaster I've had on recently, I've asked this question pretty much. Mm-hmm. Should they go ahead? What do you think, Zoe?
It is a really tough one. There was a fantastic documentary last night on Sunday, and it had Karen Smith from the New Zealand Olympic Committee and Michael Baker talking about it on both sides. And, you know, Karen kind of said the athletes have been training for so long, and, you know, yes, we've got all these sort of provisions in place for them and that type of thing. And then you've got Michael going, yeah, but is it such a good idea to hold something of this magnitude during a global pandemic in which, you know, Tokyo is still going through a massive wave? They're looking to lift restrictions on the 20th of June. 80% of Japanese people don't want the Olympic Games. So it's a real tough one. If they do go ahead, I will be cheering very loudly for our athletes. In particular, I did a wonderful interview with a young diver called Anton Jenkin-Down, who is going to be the first male diver to represent us at the Olympic Games in 37 years. And I wrote an amazing story with him to start Pride Month. We talked about what it was like to be part of the rainbow community and how we need to engage and celebrate our rainbow community more in sports. So it was such an incredibly uplifting story, and I wish him all the best if the Olympics go ahead.
Speaking of the rainbow community, now transgender athletes, people who've transgendered from male to female, and this has been a bit of an issue, and we had some former New Zealand athletes who represented New Zealand in various sports petitioning, or at least trying to get to a message to the Grant Robertson, the sports minister, that maybe it's not entirely fair on women. I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, well, how, because Grant Robertson comes back with, I think, a pretty valid point, well, do we want to shut off a significant number of people in the community from sport because they're transgender? And that's where, how do we work out a way? Because I think we've got to work out a way so everyone can have a go, can't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there was a petition that was handed into Parliament last week by Save Women's Sport Australasia, along with a letter that was signed by more than 40 former Olympic and elite athletes, and asking for an extension to the guiding principles by Sport New Zealand, who are currently putting together the principles for transgender inclusion in community sports. So we're not talking about elite sport. Transgender inclusion in elite sport is overseen by governing bodies like World Rugby, who decided not to allow transgender women to play last year, and the Olympic Committee, International Olympic Committee. And with the Olympics, Laurel Hubbard will be possibly the first transgender athlete to represent any nation at the Olympic Games if this goes ahead. And there are big discussions on both sides. So one side saying that there's unequivocal evidence that trans women have a performance advantage over female competitors in regards to testosterone. But then on the other side, they're saying there actually isn't enough information to talk about, you know, research to say that that is the case. And in fact, I interviewed a former former athlete who has transitioned from male to female, and talked about the fact that when you've gone through transition, particularly medical transition, because transition can come in lots of different ways, not just medical, but there's social, there's legal, and then there's medical. So she's gone through medical transition, and she's got no testosterone left in her body, and so she's got, you know, it's really hard for her to compete at a top level and be competitive. So I think it's really great that we are having these conversations, and that we're continuing to have these conversations, and that we're doing it in a way that is respectful and collaborative and engaging. And, you know, I know that I've said this quite a lot, but for me, Brian, trans women are women. And I've been having some really great conversations with people around this, and like a lot of people have said to me as well that, you know, men are deciding to be women to get an unfair advantage over cisgendered women. And I've covered this topic for a long time, and I've read widely on this subject, and I haven't found any evidence for that yet. I've spent a lot of time with trans communities trying to understand their experience a bit more and what it's like for them. And, you know, they just don't decide one day that they wake up and they go, oh, I'm going to be a woman today. It's just not how it works. These people just want to live their lives like the rest of us and be accepted. One of the really interesting subjects and issues that they talk about within the Sport New Zealand guidelines is the redesigning of changing rooms and toilets, which is one of my favourites we've been talking
about. Oh, we're back
about.
There again.
It's one of my favourite subjects. And this is really important because, you know, everyone has a right to feel safe in going to the bathroom and getting changed. And, you know, having these spaces designed properly, so a lot of these spaces, particularly in our sporting spaces, were designed by men for men's bodies and interests. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where we thought that sport was bad for women's bodies and we were discouraged from participating. So there weren't even spaces for women not that long ago. And so now we are starting to change, but how do we be more inclusive in these environments? How do we redesign it? Yes, I know it's an expensive issue, but you know, it's also for public health and public good, because everyone deserves to play and participate and engage in sport. And doing so brings so many good benefits, not only for social cohesion, but, you know, also for your own mental health and well-being. And our trans community, they're already severely marginalised as it is. About 50% of our trans community are actively avoiding sport and also changing rooms / toilets in public places because of discrimination. So it's really great that we're having these discussions, and we need to do so in a really open and respectful and educated manner, and read everything, read widely. And we've got some amazing, amazing, talented people who live in New Zealand who know this issue really well, who, you know, are from Otago University and Waikato University, and, you know, they've done research on this type of thing. So read widely. But it's not over yet. The consultation period, there's still more to come in this area. But New Zealand Rugby will be allowing transgender players to play next year. It's just a matter of where that will be, whether that will be against women, so trans women playing against women, or whether that will be against men. One side thinks that transgender women should play against men, and the other side believes that transgender women should play against women because they're women. So it's a really interesting discussion.
Zoe, can I ask you whether you think one of the roles of a sports person is to front up to the media?
Are you talking about Naomi Osaka?
Yes.
Yeah, do you know what? I back her. I think she did the right thing. And I think for me, looking at it as a sports journalist, those sports journalists who took her to task over it actually need to have a decent good look at themselves, because there are journalists who are in war zones and covering the front lines right now who are dying, and all they're doing is sitting in a press conference waiting for someone to say something. I mean, how horrible that they get to sit there and watch tennis all day and have to write something. I think we need to be talking about mental health and mental well-being. She's saying that she's not feeling great, that she just wants to play tennis, she wants to be the best that she can be, and she can't do that if she's being hounded by some really... And so honestly, Brian, some of the questions at these press conferences are utterly stupid, particularly the ones that are being asked of female athletes. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So good on her. I'm all for supporting her. And I think it's awful the way that the French, Open, kind of did what they did to her.
To be fair to them, though, I mean, they were just following the rules as they thought that they applied, and maybe thought it would be unfair to say you don't have to, and then expect other players to do so. So I can understand the bind they were in, even though, like you, I have some sympathy for Naomi Osaka.
It would have been very interesting if she'd just shown up and gone, I'm just here so that I don't get fined.
Oh, but, that's what somebody else did, US sports star, right?
Yeah. But at the same time, we put far too much pressure on our athletes, and this is something that I've written about recently around fatigue as well. So approximately 50% of our elite athletes at the moment in our kind of COVID world are struggling with anxiety or fatigue. And that comes down to lots of things. So not only pressure on themselves to be the very best that they can be, but pressure from external factors as well. So if you look at primarily women, for example, not only are they trying to be professional athletes, but they don't get paid like the men get paid, so then they've got to hold down three jobs and they've got a family to look after and they've got to do all these other things as well to try and make ends meet instead of just focusing on playing and being a professional athlete. So it's no wonder particularly our female athletes are being fatigued.
Carry on, sorry.
No, and then I was going to say, and then we've got the pressure of things like fronting up to the media and being on social media and trying to be a role model and looking thin and all of these other things. And I did a story recently around social media and the impacts of social media primarily on elite female athletes. 80% of elite female athletes in New Zealand say that social media is the number one pressure for them to conform to traditional feminine body ideals. 75% say that pressure leads to certain, has a detrimental impact on their health, including disordered eating practices and disruptive menstruation cycles. And 54% say that they get more pressure to perform on social media than they do from their coach.
Okay, Zoe, we've got a minute for one more topic, which I want to squeeze in. New Zealand have beaten England in a test series. This is the men's team. Cricket, 1-0 in a two-match series. How excited are you about the prospects of beating India in the final next week in 45 seconds?
I'm very excited, and it will be great to have Kane Williamson back. I know that he's coming back from injury. 22 years it's been since we've had something like this happen, our first test series in England. So it would be great to have a test series win and the test championship win. Yes, go the Black Caps.
But who are we going to leave out of the team?
Oh, it's a tough question. I don't know.
You know what, Zoe? Nor do I. That's a nice problem for the selectors to have. Thanks
that
so
is
much.
A good problem.
Thanks so much, Zoe.
Bye.
That's Zoe George back with more sport in about 6 weeks from now. Oh, yes, briefly the scorecard because a rural listener wanted it. England batted first in this game, 303 all out. New Zealand batted second, 388 all out. Top scorer was, I think, Devon Conway, 82. Then we skittled them in their second innings for 122. Matt Henry and Neil Wagner got 100, got three wickets each, and then we polished off the runs 41 for 2 and won by 8 wickets. So there you go, listener.